Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon, sir. Thank you so much to you and your listeners.
Lovely. Thank you so much. Are you well?
Yes, good. Thank you.
Lovely. Great to have you here on the show. Now, we're going to be talking about non-speaking autism at work. We spoke the other week about, autistic people at work, and we talked about the church setting. We talked about the home setting, at school setting. And we want to now focus, as we close the autism month, to talk to you about non-speaking autism at work. And research into autistic communication is unfortunately often framed as the study of perceived deficits compared to non-autistic people. Now, this deficit-based approach can suggest that non-autistic communication styles and preferences are correct or superior, and that autistic people lack communication skills in comparison. Now, this poses a significant challenge for non-speaking autistic people in the workplace. Now, this is why we are speaking to you, so that you can actually give us a much more insight into that. And I want to welcome all of those who are joining us, listening to us, and of course, to please do call us if you can, +27 734 703 520. Now, Mark, first of all, please tell us about your involvement in this space.
So I help a young non-speaking autistic individual run his own NPO.
Okay.
The Zakwande Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
It was founded and is presently being run by a 19-year-old autistic young man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And every day him and I work together in an office space.
Mm-hmm.
He is non-speaking, so he's unable to produce speech like I am doing now,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But he is not nonverbal. Nonverbal comes from the Latin without words,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he is autistic and struggles to move his body and so lacks speech,
mm-hmm.
But his brain is intact and understands all aspects of language,
mm-hmm.
And his cognition is perfectly intact.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he uses a letterboard in order to communicate,
mm-hmm.
Where he'll point to letters to spell out his words, mm-hmm. And so create sentences and paragraphs and instructions that I can then carry out on his behalf.
Okay. Letterboard, is it in use because he is not able to write, at least?
Yes, that's correct. So Zakwande is a non-speaking autistic,
mm-hmm.
That reports he struggles to move his body willfully.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he knows right from wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He understands what's expected of him.
Mm-hmm.
But when his brain sends the message to his body to move in a certain way or to respond in a certain way, his body doesn't listen to the command.
Mm.
And so over many years of dedicated practice and patience on his part and on various therapists and letterboard users, he was able to develop the motor skill to point to letters, mm-hmm. instead of trying to use his mouth to articulate his words.
Or his hand to write.
Even the hand, it's fine motor, which is what he seems to struggle with.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we keep it in gross motor. Mm-hmm, we keep it slightly bigger movements that allow, different parts of the brain to handle his communication.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned earlier that he's non-speaking, but he's not non-verbal. What's the distinction there?
So you and I are speaking now with speech, right? It's produced sounds that we are creating with our lips, with our tongue, with our vocal cords. And when we have to think of saying the word ball, for example, we don't need to think of pursing our lips for the B, and rounding our mouth for the O, and bringing our tongue forward for the L. But there is a lot of fine motor, mm-hmm. that we are actually using in order to produce speech.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And with Zakwande and many other non-speakers that we work with,
mm-hmm.
they report struggling to control their body. And the parts of the brain that control the body control different aspects, and the fine motor requires a large part of that area of the brain. And so if they struggle or they have difficulty in those parts of the brain, it makes more sense that they'd have difficulty with fine motor tasks, such as holding fine pencils or sign language or spoken word, which requires tongue, lips, mouth, vocal folds. Even controlling your breath as you speak is motor actions, and controlling their body is what a lot of them report they struggle with.
So they can be non-speaking but verbal.
So verbal is from the Latin word, which means word. And so when we say non-verbal, it directly translates to without words. And Sekwande has words. He's without speech.
I see.
To relay those words.
I get you.
Just like a deaf person or a mute person cannot produce speech, but they can write, they can sign in other ways. So he knows he has words. He's just without a means of communicating those words because his body doesn't allow him the fine motor control required to do that.
Now, talk to us about the challenges that are faced by non-speaking autistic people in the workplace.
So, for the most part, there aren't many opportunities for non-speaking autistics in the workplace. Even Sekwande's foundation, he had to create his own space. And at the age of 14, he was fortunate enough to be in a position to start his own NPO. And from there, he left school. He partnered up with myself and a few of our colleagues. And since then, we've been advocating and traveling around the country for autistic rights, for communication, for education, trying to let people know that these people are just trapped in bodies that don't listen to them.
Now, how does masking, that is forcing oneself to act like a non-autistic people in line with social norms, negatively impact autistic people in the workspace?
Yeah, it's not only in the workspace. I think masking is a common coping mechanism, I would say, for many autistics. Masking, if I understand you correctly, we're referring to where people try and cover up their autistic traits. They pretend to be okay with things that they're not okay with, or they try and inhibit certain behaviors or patterns of behavior that they would otherwise, in a safe environment, be free to express. And so, yeah, many of these autistics, maybe we take a step back and I explain that all of us have a brain. All of us have an experience of being a human on this planet. And there is something inside there that controls the brain and the body, right? There is an experiencer inside the soul. And non-speaking autistics share that same viewpoint. For you and I, as we're sitting here having this conversation, we're both in control of our body. But if someone were to bust into your studio over there with weapons, you wouldn't be, oh, excuse me, Mark, sorry, listeners, we need to go. We would be out of here, right? And so there is part of your brain that will control your body, and it doesn't require your permission to do that. It will get your body to safety, and it doesn't have time for you to make decisions and say, oh, I share those shoes, or that man's balaclava looks scary, or these are big weapons or small weapons, etc. Right? It doesn't have time for you to make these decisions. It gets you safe. And you will need to move your body. Your body wouldn't move unless your brain is sending signals to your body to move. But you're not conscious, and you can't interrupt that process because it needs to get you safe. And the non-speaking autistics report that this is their experience. It seems that that part of their brain is what's running their body. They know it doesn't need to be so anxious. They know it doesn't need to steal chips off of the plate when the waiter walks past you. They know they shouldn't run up to the counter and just grab bubblegum and shove it in their mouth. You know, they get shouted at. They feel uncomfortable in social environments. And so they try and inhibit these behaviors. And very often they have to mask these things, or they just completely remove themselves from, either they remove themselves or are removed from society, because we don't understand this mind-body disconnect that they seem to struggle with.
Yeah. Now, thank you so much for that, Mark. Now, there is often an assumption of a lack of competence when dealing with non-speaking or autistic persons in a work setting. Well, in fact, in different settings, even at school. What needs to be done to come away from that way of perception?
Presuming competence would be the best place to start.
Right.
What I mean by that is that in the absence of information to the contrary, we have to make decisions about these children's future education plans. And if we were to assume that they can only achieve, let's say, 30%, then we only expose them to 30%. And the maximum they will ever achieve, every single one of them, is 30%. When we presume competence, we presume they are capable of understanding and functioning at 100%. And so we expose them to everything. We give them the same opportunities as everybody else. And we allow them to guide that process. If they show us they can't cope, then we can dial it back. But if we decide they can only handle or manage 30%, we might be leaving 70% on the table. Whereas if we presume competence, we expose them to the full experience, their full educational rights, their full communication rights, their full inclusion in society. Unfortunately, as you say, all the assessments that are currently being used to test cognition and language require some form of motor control, motor output. You need to touch a face card or a picture card of a boy or a car or a truck. And when I say touch the truck and you're unable to move your body, or your body automatically just lashes out of instinct and hits the boy, then I assume, oh no, shame, poor Zama might not understand what a truck is. He keeps hitting the boy. And so our assessments are not true reflections of the capabilities, of the abilities of these individuals. And so our assessment tools need to change. And while that's happening, we can't wait. We can't leave these people and wait for the rest of the world to catch up. We need to presume competence in the meanwhile. It's the least dangerous assumption. If we're wrong and they can't do 100%, we can dial it back. But if we're wrong and we've kept them at 30%, we've denied them access to 70%. And that is a worse mistake to make. So in the absence of that information, not being able to know which is the correct path to take, presuming competence is always the least dangerous assumption.
Yeah. Now, thank you for that. Now, the world, you know, may automatically assume that a non-speaking autistic individual has nothing to say or contribute. How do we correct that narrative?
I would start by treating them with respect and dignity. These are human beings. These are souls that have dreams, hopes, fears, aspirations, likes and dislikes, just like the rest of us. And they are just trapped in bodies that, one, have sensory challenges. They're very sensitive to sounds, to sights, to smells, to tactile sensations. So accommodating those needs would be very useful. and then presuming competence, allowing access to their basic human rights.
And whose responsibility is it to foster inclusion and mutual respect then, is especially in the workplace? Is it management? Is it maybe people close by? Or is it the autistic person themselves? Or perhaps the entire team?
So to tie in the last 2 points, one, I would say, if you are involved in the life of a non-speaking autistic, seek out the opinions and voices, in inverted commas, of other non-speakers. There are non-speaking autistics like Sekwande who are advocating, who are sharing their experiences of the world, who are able to communicate and let people know what they experience and what works for them and what doesn't work for them. And so listening to the non-speakers themselves is the first step. The second step ties into the deficit model that you were describing earlier. And this is sort of the medical model of disability, where there is a blueprint for a perfect human being. And any deviation from this blueprint needs to be fixed or corrected or molded back into shape of this perfect blueprint. And so disabilities are seen as things that need to be corrected. And Sekwande is not disabled as an individual. I wear corrective glasses, right? There are people who work and operate in wheelchairs. Those people are not disabled when buildings have ramp access. I am not disabled because I have reading glasses, but society caters for those disabilities. And it's in the interaction between society and Sekwande that his disability becomes apparent. It's because society as a whole, the school systems, even parents, the doctors, the therapists, so many people who are involved in orchestrating and directing the lives of these individuals have a misconception that they don't understand, that they're naughty or disobedient, that there's no point in educating them because they don't understand anyway. And this cannot be further from the truth.
I do have a question also that's coming on the line. It says, because of lack of information and education about this, many of us tend to avoid autistic people or people that we just do not understand for fear of offending them or unintentionally saying something wrong to them. How would you advise people to connect with the autistic people and not treat them like lepers?
I would encourage people to adopt an attitude of curiosity.
Oh, okay.
Right. Be curious about the person. Don't be dismissive. Don't be ignorant and short-sighted. Mm-hmm. Right. These are fully developed human beings. Yes, they might stim, which is self-stimulating behaviors. Some people rock, some people sing songs or repeat certain phrases, right? It may seem unusual from the outside, but I can guarantee every single person listening that when that non-speaker explains what's going on from their perspective, it makes perfect sense. I've worked with kids who on the board will spell out, "Mom, Dad, I'm putting on weight. Please don't allow me to eat pizza anymore. I think the cheese is, and the bread is, making me pick up weight." Mm-hmm. And the parents come back the next week and they tell me, "Mark, he's fighting with us. When we take the pizza away and we put a salad down, he throws it across the table." Mm-hmm. And when you ask the child what's going on, they'll even spell out, "Don't listen to my body. It's going to fight. Please don't let it. We're in this together. Mm-hmm. I don't want the pizza." So there is that much of a disconnect between what the individual wants and what the body is actually expressing. And when we can get past that, when we can see through that, when we can assist their needs in a healthier way, we can support them to function better.
Yeah, no, thank you so much, Mark. That was a lovely, very informative conversation, one that I think many of us should do, and especially that we need to connect with neurodivergent persons and be able to form those warm, lovely relationships and understanding, you know, where they come from. All the very best together with Zakwande for the foundation.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming through.
Thank you.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.